Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Mr. Herman Pretorius. Herman, how are you doing?
I'm well, and as you said when we joined the stream, it's a Friday, and that made my heart flutter.
Yes, no, it's a very good day to be. It's in fact one of the best days of the week. We also have Mr. Terence Corrigan with us today. Terence, how are you?
I'm okay. Don't share the enthusiasm about Fridays, but anyway.
No, well, I mean, it's like me and my hatred of spring. It's not a popular opinion, but it's one I hold dearly. So anyway, we have had a couple of tech problems on the show over the last couple of episodes, as I'm sure you've noticed. We've been trying out a new platform, and there have been some issues with that. So apologies if the show has not been appearing at the normal time in your podcast feeds or on YouTube. We are doing our best to rectify that, and hopefully next week should be smoother. Let's jump into our first story of today, and this is continuing with yesterday's top story, and that is the fallout from the removal of Silias Brink as the mayor of Tshwane, the mayor of Pretoria. Silias Brink was voted out by the ANC, EFF, Patriotic Alliance, and Action SA yesterday in a motion of no confidence in the Tshwane City Council. The motion was rejected by, of course, the DA, but also the IFP, ACDP, and Freedom Front Plus, who all joined in opposing the new coalition. And so now the question is, what's next? There's sort of been rumors that maybe Action SA and the ANC had decided on some sort of deal behind the scenes as to who was going to control the city afterwards. But that doesn't seem to have actually had much concrete success. There's some news reporting now about who's going to be the next mayor. And Action SA said they're going to field their current deputy mayor as their mayoral candidate in the new government. But the ANC has also not ruled out putting forward its own candidate to be a part of the new city government. The EFF and the Patriotic Alliance are also very excited to be involved in the municipal mayoral committee as well. And so there's going to be a lot of hustling and jostling about positions there. We've also had some reporting which suggests that the ANC and DA were in talks about whether the ANC would withdraw its motion right down to the wire yesterday before the vote went ahead. And apparently the ANC presented the DA with a, quote, power-sharing deal for Gauteng metros, including Tshwane. The details of the deal are not widely known outside of the negotiations. However, the DA said that they weren't willing to reject or accept this deal, but they wanted the ANC to withdraw the motion so that they could then discuss with their leadership in national level whether they would accept this deal. The ANC said they would not withdraw the motion, and the DA says, well, then no more negotiations are going to be had with us, at least in Gauteng. So it looks like the ANC is back on top in pretty much all the metros in Gauteng and all the municipalities, say, for Midvale. And the DA is out everywhere. There are still apparently ongoing negotiations between the DA and ANC in Ekurhuleni, but it seems to me as though the ANC has decided that it's not doing anything unless it kind of gets all of the municipalities as a package deal, which is kind of interesting. So, Herman, let me start with you. I mean, there's so many kind of I guess there's three big players to talk about here: the ANC, Action SA, and the DA. So your thoughts on how this is playing out?
Well, let's do Action SA first. And we've spoken about this a few times in the shows, but it is something I still struggle to wrap my head around. Is political parties are, you know, practically Darwinian creatures. They do what they do to optimize their chances of survival. And they do it on the basis of either implicit or explicit cost-benefit calculations. And to look at politics through that perspective helps you in 99 cases out of 100 to understand why political parties or politicians chose the way they chose. So that's what makes this one difficult to judge in terms of Action SA. Because the whatever angle you approach it from, the potential for a win, a positive, a cost that out, a benefit that outweighs the cost, and that assists Action SA to survive as a political party. No matter how you look at it, there seems to be very weak reasoning, to the extent that I would say the best case that Action SA could make, or you know, steel-manning Action SA's behavior, would boil down to coming to the conclusion that relevance, without relevance, you don't have any political capital. Without political capital, you can't attract support, attention, donors, those sorts of goods. So steel-manning Action SA's position and saying, look, they are probably chasing relevance. They can't fall between the cracks. That'll be death for a political party. They need to make themselves matter. And in Joburg, that reasoning makes complete sense. I think Joburg was in such a horrendous state of misgovernance that any improvement or any stability was a step up from the chaos of the Aljamar mayoralties. So in Joburg, that thinking helps understand what goes on there. But in Tshwane, the problem is that Action SA have lost a month's worth of the air war in terms of messaging. The DA has done really well in portraying the coalition as stable, and the fact seems to support that the coalition was doing some good stuff if you look at the Auditor General reports, and even if you look at what Action SA was saying just a month or two ago. Then the question is, what is Action SA doing that could help them here? And if it is relevance, like they are trying to replicate the Joburg situation, then I think they've miscalculated the cost versus the benefit here. Action SA is a party that is polling, from what I hear from inside the DA with their internal tracking poll that is, infamously accurate, that Action SA is polling at close to 0%. And at 0% amongst white voters. Now, the problem that Action SA has is, black voters. So the thing that Action SA has left is that as far back as 2022, SRF polling said that the party was essentially 60% white in its support base. Now it is trying to reposition itself as the party of the townships in Pretoria. Yet it is scoring 0% among black voters. So if the win was to achieve relevance and strengthen the base, then they've gone in exactly the opposite direction of what their own member data, voting data, should be showing. So that's Action SA. The DA, I think, have actually shown a bit of backbone. It's easy to criticize them, and I do so often in terms of going into the GNU, not really getting the concessions they want on ministerial positions, not really getting the concessions they want on the Bella Bill, NHI perhaps a different story, and now losing control of Tshwane. So the DA has had a rough deal. Yet, I think they were quite principled and right to walk away from the ANC's late in the day offer of a power sharing agreement, because as the reporting, I think, by Natasha Merriam picks up, is that the DA said, we're willing to entertain this deal, but we have to take it to our federal structures. And then the ANC said no, and then the DA said fine, then no more negotiations. And it's something resembling a spine to walk away from negotiations and to pay the price of losing governance of the capital city. And perhaps lastly, the ANC situation here is what we're seeing playing out here is the difference between the national ANC and the provincial ANCs, and that the ANC will start splitting, but not by factions, but likely by regions, because the ANC in each province will, in the Darwinian sense of survival, be chasing a different mode of survival. In KwaZulu-Natal and Western Cape and Gauteng, these three crucial battleground provinces, the ANC needs a different thing. So the real challenge for the ANC here is how a national ANC leadership can maintain a survival game in at three levels in three provinces. And what Panyaza Lesufi has done in Gauteng is a problem for Ramaphosa nationally.
So, Terence, we were talking a little bit about this issue before the show, and you mentioned that you thought that one of the things that's clear from this is how important, I think, you said, personalities were in politics. And I think that's very true. You know, there's often a temptation by analysts and even by some sort of political junkies and just ordinary voters to kind of cast parties as being, you know, particularly if you read the news a lot, as being fairly strategic or having sort of ideological objectives. And that's true. They do to some degree, as Herman said, you know, there is a Darwinian sense in which parties seek to survive. But at the end of the day, parties are made of people, and often people who think quite a lot of themselves. And that's true for all political parties. And so it's no surprise then that sometimes there can be rather unfortunate clashes of personality. What are your thoughts, well, James?
I think that this has been probably the big issue that's animated the relationship between the DA and Action SA. Well, there are other bits and pieces to that too. They're both fundamentally pushing for the same constituency. Although it is an interesting thing that they are trying, as Herman says, they are trying to reposition themselves. I think they actually use the phrase on the other side of the railway track. You know, the bad blood between someone like Steenhuisen and Michael Beaumont is legendary. And I think that Helen Mashaba, I remember thinking this when he first entered politics, that capabilities needed to be a businessman don't necessarily translate into those needed to be a politician. I mean, it's the same. This is also the Ramaphosa and the Donald Trump argument. Maybe they do. Maybe someone can make the leap. But I think that for Mr. Mashab, it's very much a case of he is the chairman of the board, and I think that a lot of this party's appeal is based around a very compelling life story. Listening to what he's had to say on say in media interviews, so give him his due. I think he's been quite accessible to the media. There seems to be a sort of visceral dislike of the DA, which he blames on what he sees as its betrayal. I think that the fact that it went off to work with the ANC, you know, affected him personally. But yeah, you know, I think that he sees things in a very different light from what an establishment politician would, you know, somebody who's climbed the greasy pole. For Mr. Mashaba, I think it's a case of this is my vision, and the shortest way is XYZ, and you know, he's not afraid of fighting with the DA about it. I do think though that if this is the case, he's overestimated what is achievable in South Africa. Interestingly, I do remember about 2 months ago, he said on Biz News, "No, you know, we're Celia's Brink's doing an okay job, so we're okay with that." So that seems to have done a 360, but. You know, Peter Dirk Gaines once said, "It's hypocrisy is the Vaseline of political intercourse." So maybe we shouldn't be too hard on him.
It's a very evocative statement. This is one of the kind of amazing things, as you say. You know, just a few months ago, Mashaba was going around saying, this thing's going okay. There's some things we weren't happy about, but whatever." And now he's talking about the DA as an abusive husband who's going to kill you. I mean, it seems as though Action SA at some point down the line decided that the real reason they didn't do well in the last election was because they were part of the multi-party charter, and that this allowed the DA to squish them. And I think there's at least some truth to that. I think it definitely hurt the people who were you know, possibly considering voting for Action SA and considered voting for the DA. But yeah, no, I don't think they ran a good campaign in this 2024 election. So I think they should really be examining those problems. Go ahead, Terence.
I would say this, that the idea that the DA wants to kill them, I think that is probably accurate. In the sense that the
two parties, and the feeling is mutual. I think both of them do intend to destroy each other.
And you know that is not personal, that is strategic, because I think that they compete for a very closely aligned set of voters, and there's sort of not enough room in the crawl for both balls. So on the other side, I think that they spent a good deal of their existence trying to draw support away from the DA. So in a sense, you know, they'd like to put the knife in the DA's back.
So Herman, my final sort of question on this to you is,
pardon me,
how could these two Action SA do this though without apparently getting a solid concession that they were going to get, I don't know, either the deputy mayorship or the mayorship? Because it kind of seems as though there's no actual done deal with the ANC other than we're going to get rid of the DA. It's entirely possible that we could end up with more chaos in Tswane because no one will be able to agree. Do you think that's likely, or what's your thoughts?
It's certainly possible. I mean, it happened in Ekurhuleni, where Tanya Campbell, the DA mayor, was removed through a motion of no confidence. Then the ANC and the EFF couldn't agree on who should get the mayoralty, and Tanya Campbell was re-elected and then later on removed. So it is possible. But I think what we're looking at is just amateurish politics, to be completely frank. And I think there are two reasons, well, three reasons that come to mind with Action SA just, you know, suffering from amateur hour. Firstly, let me overture that by saying part of why they ran a bad campaign is because their finances were in a terrible state. The party had competed in the 2021 local government elections, did well, became the sixth biggest party with 2.3 or 2.4% of the vote, having only contested in a few select areas. They seem to be on a growth trajectory, recruiting high-level members, John Moody, Athol Trollope, people, Makhosi Khoza, people who at the time had some political cred, as it were. And what became clear is that they were recruiting on a paycheck quite often. They were promising big salaries for people from other parties, especially the DA, to come over to them. And that was based on the assumption that their fundraising would keep pace with their expenses. But then they started to screw around with the mayoralty in Johannesburg. They cost Mpopa Latse the opportunity to appoint Johan Mettler as city manager, a widely respected civil servant. And they sunk the mayoralty of Randall Williams in Tswane through allegations of quote-unquote unsolicited bid of 26 or so billion rand, which they presented as if the city was going to spend 20, you know, whatever billions of rands. Meanwhile, with the other way around, the revenue expected from the deal was in the billions over a 20-year period. Then their funders soured on this idea that Action SA could be this coalition wrecker, where it had quite deliberately promoted itself as an extension of the opposition coalition's potential. They could reach, as they showed in 2021, places where the DA had no hope of reaching. They got 20% in some wards in Soweto in 2021, a truly remarkable feat. But then they lost like 85% of their funders, their donors, and that made their election incredibly difficult, their election campaign incredibly difficult to run because they were on a tight budget and they did badly. So then where we are currently with Action SA sort of stuck in an amateur hour with, you know, pulling the pin out of the grenade without first checking whether they want to chuck it. Is number one that they did that. Number two, that they let their memberships expire and asked all their members to reapply in August. That was a very weird party management decision. All memberships of Action SA lapsed in August, at the end of August, I think. So all Action SA members, party members, needed to reapply for membership. Now, that's just moronic. That is not how you do party politics. You try to make it as easy as someone for as possible for someone to remain a member, and they didn't do that, and that's quite amateurish. And then the third indication of amateur is that Herman Mashaba seems to have no party support around him anymore. There's no inclination of message discipline. He appeared, Terence says rightly, he's quite accessible to the media, but when he is on the media, he doesn't help the party's case. I mean, think what you will of Michael Beaumont. He's a well-spoken, clever guy who is a convincing public speaker and is very good in hostile interview environments. Herman Mashaba is not. He is inelegant, he is brash, he is angry, he is incoherent, and quite often he comes across as you know, not the sharpest tool in the shed. So one would hope that he is at least prepared by party staff, briefing him, preparing him for these interviews, but that seems to be totally absent. And no one seems to be saying to him, Mr. Mashaba, perhaps not lose your temper on social media over an abbreviation. All of these things indicate a party that has really just lost whatever professionalism it might have had. So I must say, if I were Action SA, if I were the Senate, if I were their voters, if I were their donors, if I were Herman Mashaba, I'd be pretty ashamed about what's happening to this organization that started out with tremendous potential.
It is an interesting kind of fumble of the ball, I think. And who knows? I mean, there's still 2 years to go to the local government election, but I think they're not in for a good time.
Well, year and a half.
Year and a half, not even, yeah. So, would not like to be in their shoes right now. But, you know, maybe they know something I don't. We shall have to see. Let us go on to now our next story, because we've run quite long on that one. And we did talk about this last week when I was absent. And I know, Herman, you had some thoughts on the show, but on this issue. But Terence has actually just written a letter that appeared, I believe, in Business Day on this. And so I thought it would be great to ask him about his thoughts. And this is the proposed renaming of Sandton Drive in Johannesburg after Lilia Khaled, who is famous or infamous, depending on your political persuasion, for being the first woman to hijack an airplane, hijacking an American airplane in 1969, and that targeting it specifically because of America's support for Israel and because, quote, we are against America because she is an imperialist country. Terence, the one of the specific reasons, it seems, the ANC and EFF and Al Jamaha, who also play in this, have decided to, you know, push for the renaming of Sandton Drive is because that is, of course, where the American consulate in Johannesburg is. This seems like a very petty and deliberate way to sort of insult the Americans. I don't know. What do you make of this?
Well, it's not a matter of interpretation. Back in, this has been knocking around since 2018. And in 2018, the idea of renaming Sandton Drive was mooted by Al Jamar, I think, by Tapela Ahmad, the guy who subsequently tweeted, "We are Hamas," and showed a picture of himself holding an assault rifle. I think initially they wanted to name it Ramallah Drive, but apparently there is something in the naming conventions that you don't name streets after other places, which I'm not sure quite how that works, because there's a whole section of, you know, one part of Joburg that's named after American states, like there's a Wyoming Avenue and whatever. So I don't know, but for whatever reason, so then they decided, oh well, let's call it Leila Khaled Drive. Now, and he made it very clear that they were doing this because this is where the U.S. consulate embassy is on that street. I thought a consulate and an embassy were distinct institutions, but not according to his communication. But point is. What I found particularly interesting about this is not that the ANC or that this particular faction of our politics wants to express their pro-Palestinian bona fides, which is a dyed-in-the-wool thing for them. But they chose Leila Khaled, not Yasser Arafat. Now, as far as I can tell, there's no Yasser Arafat Street in Johannesburg at the moment. I think there is one in Cape Town. And why that's significant is because Yasser Arafat is a far more prominent, avatar of Palestinian nationalism. People would, I think, by and large, probably know who that is. And he actually does have a very kind of vague connection to Johannesburg. He and Nelson Mandela appeared on stages together, and he made a speech in a Johannesburg mosque where he declared that the Oslo Accords were like a tactical move, and jihad was still the thing. Leila Khaled, by contrast, was very much part of that, part of the sort of 60s and 70s revolutionary tradition. That's the Red Army factions in Europe, or the Baader-Meinhof gang. Their view was very harshly pro-West, and I think far more secular. But she's become kind of the poster child for Palestinian militancy. One could make an argument that Yasser Arafat, whatever his numerous failings, was a statesman when he was invited to shake hands with in America and all that sort of thing. Leila Khaled wasn't interested in that. She says there is no such thing as a peace process because Israel holds all the cards. It's all about resistance. Her big her attraction is captured in this photograph of her wearing a kafir and holding an AK. This is obviously something that is calculated not just to show a middle finger to the Americans, but to show a particular type of middle finger that in this city we believe that you kind of deserve what she did. It's a way of communicating that if someone walks into your building with a firearm and opens fire, we're sort of okay with that. I'm old enough to remember 9/11, and there was a lot of chatter going on about, well, is this really terrorism or is this resistance? Now, the political scientists can, of course, make these arguments. It's probably not something though you want to do, with a country with which you have diplomatic relations. It's just like, everyone knows where I stand on the question of China, but I certainly wouldn't, I certainly wouldn't think it prudent to rename the street where the Chinese embassy is located. It's a, Independent Republic of Taiwan Avenue or something like that.
Or Chiang Kai-shek Avenue or something like that.
Chiang Kai-shek, you might get away with because, he still believed in one China. Point is, that this is gratuitously and self-indulgently offensive. And the other thing is, it achieves nothing. Say what you want about the world, going to the international court and whatever. That is potentially a consequential thing. They get that judgment. Israel, I think, has a problem. A country deemed by an international tribunal to be engaging in genocide, that's not something you walk away from easily. Now, and if this is really, really what South Africa wants, Shrek level, really, really, well, okay, maybe they're willing to burn bridges or whatever for renaming a street, causing all those businesses and all those households to have to change their documents, probably inflicting billions of rands of unnecessary expenditure to do what? To drop your trousers and wiggle your posterior. Why don't you just do that? it'll attract more attention, and it's over. And Ramaphosa can just quietly say to the American embassy, "I don't know what goes through these people's heads sometimes." However, when the American embassy, the American consulate itself has to like claim, just, you know, like give directions, come down Leila Khalid Avenue and, you know, turn into Che Guevara Court or whatever, and, you know, down Death to America Alley. No, I don't know. It's as I said, it's the politics of the playground.
Yeah, look, it is my belief, and I think it is my belief that Joburg is headed for a major water crisis. I think we've already seen an increasing number of water outages, and I think it's only going to get worse to the point that it is going to be a big national story probably sometime next year and probably before the local government election. I mean, I'm not a water engineer, I don't know for sure, but that's my guess. Just like everyone who's going to be affected by that, to remember that this is what the government was doing in the lead up to what I think is probably going to be one of the most memorable municipal disasters of the country's history. So, you know, I may be wrong, but just keep that in mind that we're, you know, telling the Americans to go F themselves rather than actually trying to run the city.
Just want to add one thing very quickly. Terrence, there's nothing I can disagree with in what Terrence said, but he did mention why not name a street after Yasser Arafat. Rumor has it, and I'll have to check my sources on this, he was offered two lanes, but then the two-lane solution was rejected.
That's such a lame joke, Herman, really.
Well, yeah, but you see what I'm getting at here. You know, it's the sort of I've said this before. I think for many people in the ANC, and I think this equally applies to the EFF and, you know, some of their other hangers-on, what they really want to do is be a liberation movement, you know, the doctrine of perpetual revolution, not like as Trotsky had it, because he was a serious thinker, you know. It's the kind of like Trotsky for dummies approach that, you know, we've always got to go and, you know, on a, you know, I'm earning a civil servant salary to sort of throw bottles of peanut butter instead of petrol bombs, you know, and all you do is you look ridiculous.
Yeah. And I think if Aldermar is listening, which I doubt they are, but if they are, that they should take up your suggestion of just going and mooning the American embassy. It would probably do far more in getting notoriety for them.
A moon landing, but anyway, not faked. That's what we're after.
If they go and do that, they can probably end up on Pornhub. I understand we have a cabinet minister who's got a video there. Serious people.
cut it.
I would just like to end on some good news, which we're not going to have time to discuss. But MK's parliamentary leader, John Schlope, who was also appointed to the Judicial Services Commission, has been temporarily interdicted from appearing on the JSC and sitting in on their interviews by the Western Cape High Court, which has also ordered that Schlope, I think, pay the costs of the various groups, including the DA and AfriForum, who wanted him prevented from being on that court. And I think that's definitely a good thing. I mean, I'm not versed in the law as to whether he will ultimately be allowed to serve on the JSC, but I think morally it's unquestionable that a judge who was impeached for incredibly negative conduct as a member of the judiciary should not be allowed to be involved in the selection of future judges.
That's a
serious decision.
He was president of.
Exactly. So anyway, that's all the time we have for today on this this wacky and wonderful Friday. I did make a bit of a technical error at the beginning of this, so hopefully I can fix that before the most of you view the show. But anyway, I hope you all have a wonderful day and a wonderful weekend. We shall see you soon. Cheers, everyone.